Welcome to the Six Hats podcast, where I, Dr. Shami, a lifestyle and nutritional medicine family doctor, will talk about how women strive to find balance each day by juggling their six roles, being a woman, mother, daughter, partner, business owner, and professional. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Six Hats podcast. And I'm really excited to have Thais Gibson join us today. Now, Thais is a PhD candidate with over 13 certifications in modalities such as CBT, NLP, somatic experiencing, internal family systems, and shadow work. Now, she has over 10 years of experience running a successful practice and engaging with over 30,000 clients. Now, she has a diverse background and has created Gibson Integrated Attachment Theory. And this is a combination of traditional attachment theory with developmental psychology insights, subconscious reprogramming techniques that she's woven into a course. And that's presented at the Personal Developmental School, tongue twister, all of those, and taught in a coach training program. So let's talk about the Personal Developmental School. This was created by Thais when her private practice got fully booked with a two-year wait list. Now, this has quickly expanded to thousands of members, counting in 113 countries, and her school has over 38 million views on social media. So we're really excited to have Thais join us. Welcome, Thais.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here with you.
So Thais, I'm really curious. So from a functional medicine doctor, I see patients at the end of their journey of chronic stress. And I think all my listeners know the impact of chronic stress on the body. And this is what I see, whether it's weight gain to anxiety, to thyroid conditions, to gut health. And once they come and see me, they realize the connection to chronic stress. And when we look back, and I always ask this in my intake form, you know, past stresses, and relationships, big factor here. So I love talking about that. And I think it's really important to address. Now, I'm really curious about attachment styles, because I never really thought about it. And once I started listening to your videos, I go, wow, there's actually, I'm recognizing patterns in many people. So I'd love to start the conversation with attachment styles. Like, what are the attachment styles and how do they impact on relationships?
Absolutely. So there's basically four attachment styles for anybody who's new to this. And every single person has an attachment style. So the four attachment styles is, number one, there's a secure attachment style and essentially the conditioning that we get. So we first have to sort of preface by saying we're all conditioned, okay? And we are essentially programmed all the time by our environment and our experiences. And a neuroscientist came out named Antonio Damasio about two decades ago and proved that literally every single decision that we make is emotionally based, and also proved that our subconscious mind is responsible for roughly 95 to 97% of our beliefs, our thoughts, our emotions, our actions, and our conscious mind is like 3 to 5%. So our programming, our conditioning is all existing at the subconscious level. And this is where all of this stuff is getting stored. So you can think of your attachment style as essentially being the subconscious set of programs that you've acquired about love and relating to other people, what needs should be met in a relationship, what we can expect from other people, how we can rely on other people, if we can trust people. All of these come from our subconscious programming, AKA our conditioning. So the first attachment style, being the secure one, is the only secure attachment style, or the ones that get healthy conditioning or healthy subconscious programs about love. So they essentially learn by having a healthy set of models for growing up. They learn that when they cry or they express emotion, their caregivers come towards them, and they are consistent about this. Not perfect, but consistent. And so they learn that, okay, it's safe to express emotion. It's safe to rely on other people. It's safe to trust people. And they also get loved for who they are, not for what they're doing. So they'll, you know, let's say they're sitting coloring in the corner, the parent might just come give them love. It's not for the achievements. It's not for if they got an A on the paper. They just get love for no reason. So they also build this deeper and more inherent sense of self-worth. So this child grows up and they think it's safe to express emotion. It's safe to rely on people. It's safe to communicate my needs. It's safe to have healthy boundaries. I'm worthy of love. And so they statistically have by far and away the easiest time in relationships. And they tend to end up dating other secure people and having successful relationships accordingly. Then we have three insecure styles. And if you imagine them kind of on a continuum in a sense, at one end of the continuum, there's the anxious preoccupied attachment style. And this child usually grows up in an environment where they have loving parents, often quite loving parents, but maybe the parents are a little bit permissive. And maybe the parents are, you know, more than anything, a little bit inconsistent. So it could be that one parent is very warm and loving and the other one's kind of cold and withdrawn. And there's a big juxtaposition there. It could also be, you know, one of the most common examples would be that both parents are very loving, but they work a lot. They're traveling for their careers all the time. And the child's often left with a grandparents. And so there's these positive emotional programs they receive about love, but the painful part is that it always feels like it's taken away. So the loving parents are there and then they're gone. They're there and then they're gone. And through repetition and emotion, it actually fires and wires these big neural pathways and programs around, I'm going to be abandoned. I'm always having love taken away from me. And so this child as an adult actually grows up in relationships and they have these huge abandonment wounds. They constantly fear being abandoned, have love taken away, being alone, not being good enough, fear being rejected. And so they become chronic people pleasers and they are constantly walking on eggshells in their relationship and they really struggle to take up space. They don't want to, you know, communicate their needs too much or be too much of a burden. So they play small and they people please. And obviously this can become a source of chronic stress. On the flip end of the continuum, you have a dismissive avoidant. Dismissive avoidants are basically the opposite. They grow up with childhood emotional neglect, and it often flies under the radar. And so they grow up in an environment where it's like they just don't get their emotional needs met. The vulnerability is basically discouraged. Maybe if they cry too much or they express too much, they're kind of shunned, they're ignored. Maybe they're told, don't be a baby. A lot of the messaging they get is like, my emotions are not okay for people. And so as a result of that, they learn to be hyper independent. They don't want to rely on people. They don't want to be vulnerable to people. And as adults, they struggle to let people in and they very much struggle to commit when things become real because it reminds them of that innate sense of vulnerability they felt as children. They got rejected. And so they don't want to feel those feelings again. And they neglect their own emotions because that's how they were programmed to function. And they actually also usually dismissive avoidants end up in chronic stress. They're often in chronic sympathetic nervous system mode, sort of a lower level. And they are basically going through life either, you know, showing up for their commitments and then numbing. They spend a lot of time numbing themselves emotionally through food, through alcohol, through video games, through some sort of external numbing because of that inherent discomfort around their emotions. And last but not least, we have a fearful avoidant attachment style. And they basically share the two sides of the anxious and the avoidant. Sometimes they're actually referred to as the anxious avoidant attachment style. And they grow up with conflicting ideas about love. If I had to take a guess, as somebody who's really interested in health as well and functional medicine and not, you know, an expert like yourself and by any means in the nutrition and health area, but I love reading about it. I love studying it. I would make a big guess that people who probably struggle the most with their health are most likely to be fearful avoidant attachment styles, but they grow up with chronic stress in their environment. And usually this can be things like having a parent who's a full-blown narcissist. This could be having a parent or both parents as alcoholics or addicts. You could see that there's a terrible divorce. You know, there's generally some sort of abuse in this home, whether direct or indirect. And what happens is this child grows up constantly walking on eggshells. They are chronically hypervigilant. They are chronically in fight or flight mode. And they have this really interesting dynamic where on one side, they have a lot of good ideas about love because sometimes they have these good moments when the parent is finally sober, you know, they can be really loving, or when the narcissist is love bombing, they get the really good side. You know, they'll have these really extreme positives, but then they'll have these really extreme negatives where they'll have these really terrifying moments when the parents may be abusive or, you know, really, really painful, or they're a pawn between a set of parents going through a terrible divorce. But you'll see that they have conflicting ideas about love. On one side, they want it and they yearn for it. And they're scared of it not being there and scared of the abandonment. So they experience some of that anxious side. But on the other side, they've been made to feel trapped or unsafe through experiences in close relationships. So they fear it. And they are constantly flip-flopping back and forth between, I want you, come close. And then people get close. They're like, stay back. And they really struggle to trust and they really struggle to rely on people. And they often put a lot of pressure on themselves and are chronically dysregulated. So those are the four attachment styles. And as adults, fearful avoidants obviously struggle quite a bit in relationships. Because of that kind of hot and cold behavior, because of these conflicting ideas about what it means to be in a relationship to someone else.
I loved what you said, and you said it so clearly. I can relate to that in my line of work as well, because I often say that, you know, even when we make food choices, we actually make it quite subconsciously. And you're so right, the choices we make, emotionally based, often automatic, often like we live this kind of robotic life in the day until we sort of wake up. And I often say that to patients, like majority of your decisions are subconscious, like even going to the supermarket, what you choose, it's just so automated. So I loved what you said. And I could literally see patients in all these four categories. It's quite interesting that you described it. And I loved what you said about the numbing, because that's where health professionals come in, because they have the knowledge, they know it's bad for them, they know they want to choose different, make different choices, but it is really driven by the emotions in terms of like numbing either with food or numbing with alcohol, numbing with drugs. You're absolutely right. And I love the way we linked it back to the emotions and back to their journey as a child as well. And I see that. I see a lot of those stories of whether it's, the abuse or whether it's actually just difficult relationships with their parents, so they haven't created secure bonds as well. No, it's so interesting. And I love it. I think on your site, you can actually do a questionnaire and find out what your attachment style yes. is. Is that right?
So we have a quiz at personaldevelopmentschool.com. You can actually go right to the website, click attachment quiz, and we give you a free report. So it will tell you not just like what your attachment style is, but it will tell you what core wounds you're likely to have, like what these deep fears are, like fearful avoidance can struggle to trust. Sometimes they feel trapped or helpless. Sometimes they fear abandonment, anxious preoccupied, really fear that abandonment, exclusion, rejection, dismissible avoidance, fear being vulnerable and seen as weak. So it tells you your core wounds. It tells you your needs. It tells you steps for healing. You get a really in-depth report for all of that as well.
That's amazing. I think it's definitely worth having, going to that website and having a look. So moving on, knowing what your attachment style is, before we get on to sort of how do we improve ourselves, what can we do? But how can partners with different styles navigate in that environment? Like once you identify that your partner is so different, what do you do?
Yeah, it's a great question. The journey is always, in my opinion, towards becoming securely attached, because we can recondition our subconscious, right? Our subconscious we're not born with these programs. We acquire them through repetition and emotion, and we can actually change them to become more securely attached. And so the whole journey, ideally, is that we take some action steps to become secure together with our partner. But in those early stages, before we really have those tools and we're on that quest for ourselves, there's a few key components that are going to make the biggest difference. So number one is once you learn about your attachment style versus your partner, one of the first things is there's often relief for people, because it's like, let's say, for example, that the person's avoidant and the other person's anxious. The anxious person is like, oh, they just need more time and space because that's how they are. It's not that they don't care about me. So we start depersonalizing things. We're not personalizing them in the same way when we realize, we all have unique programs. One of the funniest things that you'll see with people is that we tend to project from our perception. We think, if somebody's anxious, that person thinks, well, I want to spend 24/7 with somebody. And if my partner doesn't want to spend 24/7 with me, they must not care about me. Rather than thinking, maybe my partner has different needs from a relationship. Maybe my partner has different ways of expressing love and connection and care. So we can first start recognizing that not everybody is as we are, and we can not take things as personally. And that's a helpful first step. The second thing is that we always go down full steam ahead through these wounds. So we tend to reproject our old stuff. And in really simplistic terms, it's like we're carrying our baggage around. So if we were abandoned growing up, for example, somebody's more anxious, then what ends up happening is the moment somebody doesn't call them back, rather than sending a text being like, hey, would love to chat tonight, call me when you can, and thinking, maybe they're stuck at work or maybe they fell asleep, they're like, they're abandoning me, their feelings change. And we go full steam ahead according to these old fears and wounds that we're carrying based on our attachment trauma. And for a dismissive avoidant, for example, if somebody is trying to spend more time with them, they're like, they're trying to make me vulnerable. So we assume these old narratives from our childhood onto our current partners as adults. And a really powerful tool for that is to work on questioning those things. And a really great way of just framing that is, if you notice your thoughts in real time, you notice yourself jumping to these old conclusions, just asking yourself the question, could it be something other than this? And that helps us look outside of this conditioned autopilot perception. The person didn't call you back or didn't text you back enough today. And you're like, they're abandoning me. They don't love me. Could it be something other than this? Could it be that they're tired? Could it be that they have a really busy job? And just being able to look for other things can help regulate us And that can be another important step. And then a third step, which is of the utmost importance, is we shouldn't just do that questioning our stories work. We should also learn to express our needs to our partner. So maybe the partner didn't call you back. It doesn't mean you just question that narrative of abandonment and then never say that you need consistency in a relationship. You might tell your partner, hey, no worries that you didn't call me back, but I just want you to know about me. I really value consistency in a relationship. And I would appreciate if we could work on that together. And when we communicate our needs early and proactively, it stops us from going down this very common and problematic space, which is we'll communicate our needs reactively. So rather than saying, hey, I would really love, you know, to spend more quality time with you. I miss you. Let's have a fun date night this weekend. We say, you never spend time with me. You don't care about me. And it comes out in the negative and critical way. And that never gets us heard and it does not get our needs met. And so, you know, those three big focus areas of just understanding our difference in programming, being able to question these old narratives that, you know, these old conclusions we always jump to, and then being able to know our needs and communicate them to our partner helps us really navigate the difference in attachment styles in a much more productive way.
I love what you said. I'm just beaming here because it's so practical. And I laugh because I often say that we get caught up in story. We really just get caught up in story. And if you're living in this autopilot, we just get caught up in that spiral of negativity and we just go down one pathway. And when you were just describing all the scenarios, it's literally happened to me. All those different scenarios. I was like, oh, I texted a friend a couple of weeks ago and just wondering why she hasn't replied to that sort of important message. And then you can easily go down different pathways. But I loved what you said. There are different reasons and we get caught up in one reason and it may not be that helpful reason. And then we love stories, to be honest, you know, humans love stories. And I often say, you know, we've got the best movie in our mind. We're the best producers, best directors of, you know, the best Netflix show because we can create drama.
Absolutely.
We know how to create drama. And sometimes we need to get just to sit back and go, actually, what have I just created? What story have I just created? Is it actually the truth? Or is it something that's literally made up? Because we just don't know.
It's made up from our past experiences. Like it's made up because of actually representing unhealed parts of ourselves. Like when we see ourselves going through these patterns, it's first because we have these wounds that we're carrying. We don't project from nowhere. We project from unresolved things. So if we fear abandonment, we project, okay, you know, if there was abandonment in childhood, we project that. If we fear being trapped because we felt trapped or controlled as children, we project that. So it's always giving us really insightful feedback when we're telling stories about what wounds we have to heal and reprogram, which is really powerful to do. And it's not just that, right? Like, it's like, that's so important, but it's actually equally as important to tell people what we need. Because sometimes, like, for example, for yourself, you said, okay, the person didn't call me back or send me a text back. And it's so easy to jump to like, oh, they don't care about the friendship or, you know, so we can question the story and that's so great. And that helps re-regulate us and not jump to conclusions and we feel better. But then we never want to just leave it there. We want to also be able to say, hey, you know, thinking of you, would love to hear from you. This was important to me. Sometimes we keep ourselves in the wounds by enacting the wounds in the relationship to ourselves. So for example, if we were abandoned growing up, then we fear abandonment, but then we also self-abandon by not communicating our needs or not letting ourselves take up space. And so even if we do the questioning of the stories, we're keeping the wounds alive by behaving in the relationship to ourselves, the way that the trauma affected us to begin with. So it's of the utmost importance if we're carrying these different wounds that we also are like, no, I'm not going to abandon myself. I'm going to tell the person what I need. I'm going to let them know and let them see me. And that in and of itself is equally healing. So there's those two really powerful parts that go together there.
Absolutely brilliant, Taze. So important. And I totally agree with you because it's so easy to go, oh, that's fine. That's okay. We'll deal with it later or not even deal with it. But you're absolutely spot on. And I feel like I can take that advice on board and just be mindful. Am I actually expressing my needs? You're absolutely right because it seems so simple and you just get on with life, but then it can pile up.
100%.
I think it's so important in especially intimate relationships or any form of relationship to express your needs. And you're so right because when I think about growing up, I was just in very conservative family and it's not something that we talked about. We didn't talk about emotions. We didn't talk about expressing our needs as well. And it's something that I've learned in my relationship just through reading, self-development, how important it is. And you're absolutely right because life can take over and we're so busy in all our little projects. So you go, hold on a sec, we're not spending enough time together. And that's important. And yes, your mind goes straight to negativity. It's like, oh my God, he doesn't care as much as I do. And all of that kind of thing. I think that's so, so important. When it comes to expressing needs, I notice that sometimes people can find that as a struggle. Mm-hmm. Where do they start? Because it's something that they're not used to and they don't know how to. And I loved how you say you express it in a positive way. This is what I'm looking for. But I'd love for you to just elaborate more on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a few steps when we're really struggling to express our needs. One of the first steps is sometimes we don't know how to express our needs because we don't know what they are. So doing some introspective work and being like, what do I need in a relationship? And if somebody's like, I don't know, where do I even start with that? A great thing to look at is like when you've had peak moments with people in past relationships, what needs were they meeting? So when you felt really loved or really cared for, what needs were people meeting? Were they validating? Were they encouraging? Were they protective? Were they really making you feel seen and heard? Were they present? You know, so looking at those things can help you sort of extract out what your needs really are. And then once you have that really important information, well, we have to start actually meeting some of those needs in the relationship to ourselves first. It's actually a huge part of the healing journey to become securely attached. And then we can bring them out into the world and communicate them to others. And there's a few things that we have to practice doing when we're communicating. Number one is we want to express in the positive, kind of like we talked about. People have no, usually when they're just starting out, it's shocking at how much we're communicating in the negative. And it's shocking how much that actually makes it really difficult to get our needs met from people. So, you know, again, framing like, you never want to spend time with me versus, hey, I'd love to spend more time together. Let's plan a date. You know, it makes all the difference for somebody. The second thing is we have to paint a clear picture of what the need looks like. So I would have this happen in client sessions all the time with couples where they would go, they would say, okay, this week I need more support from my husband. And the husband was, okay, I'll support you. And they come back the next week and she'd be like, my husband didn't do anything to support me last week. And he'd be like, what do you mean? I took out the garbage every day. And she'd be like, I needed you to hug me more often. So there's, you know, we can't just say, I need support. We have to paint a picture of what support looks like to us because we have to remember everybody has different programming. So support for one person means something totally different to another. And so when we're communicating, it's put it in the positive, paint the picture. And then the third big piece that's really important is we have to see our needs through. I think a lot of people, when it's vulnerable to communicate needs, because if we didn't get our needs met that much as children, we're kind of assuming at a subconscious level they won't be met. So it feels really scary. And, you know, a huge saboteur for this process is I've often seen clients say, you know, I communicated a need once and they did it. And then 2 weeks later, they forgot. So I'm never relying on them again. And it's like, well, that's not how humans work. You know, we have to like leverage repetition. We have to remind people because everybody has these different programmed ideas about relationships. So until we actually leverage repetition, we're not going to change somebody else's programming about what we need. They're going to go back to their old patterns of what their assumptions are about how love and relationships should be. So we have to be mindful to see our needs through, remind somebody. Of course, there may be times where you tell somebody, you communicate, you remind them, and they don't show up at all. And that may be a sign of like, hey, this may be not the right relationship for you. But we shouldn't be expecting perfection. We should be expecting progress and growth and seeing that needle move. So that's a huge part of communication that goes a really long way as well.
Really incredible advice, actually. Before we leave you, I'd love if you could share a transformative success story, just because I think it gives people so much hope. Often when patients come to me, they feel it's permanent, like it's they're stuck and they can't see the change. So I'd love for you to share a story if you can think of some.
Absolutely. So I actually had this really beautiful experience. We have this little forum and people post their stories and their success and things like that. And we actually had somebody post one last week. And there was this wonderful, wonderful woman. She came from a really, really broken home, like a lot of chaos and a lot of trauma. And she was a fearful avoidant attachment style. One of her parents really struggled with alcohol and she just never knew how to trust. And she said that she would constantly go through these relationships where she would pour into somebody and try really hard to please them. And then, you know, she wouldn't be communicating her needs and eventually she'd get burnt out and just kind of leave. And her cycle was to go from relationship to relationship to relationship. Anyway, she came into PDS because she was dating a dismissive avoidant who was the kind of commitment fearing one. And she said, like, I don't know if it's going to work. We're going to really give it a shot here. And what she did, and really what the focus point is it's not just like, heal the relationship. It's heal the relationship to yourself first, right? Like allow yourself, in her case, so much of her work was like allowing herself to take up space, allowing herself to communicate her needs to her partner before she would resent the person and just sort of pull away. So she practiced really communicating. Dismissal avoidants are quite sensitive to criticism. So she had to take really good care of communicating in a healthy way instead of resenting him and not communicating and then kind of blowing up. So she practiced a lot of work around there, really was consistent about it. He actually really showed up too to practice being more vulnerable because there was more safety in the relationship together. And he was opening up more and more to himself. And she reported and just posted her the other week that they just got engaged.
Oh, wow.
They're on their way to sort of start a life together. And she did a lot of work. And I will say, like, we have had about 31,000 people come through our program, and we have a 97.7% NPS score. So it works. Like, and I'm not saying it has to be our program or anything like that. But what I am saying is, like, if you are listening and you're like, it's really hard to be my attachment style. You know, I was a fearful avoidant attachment style. That's how I got into this work to begin with. This is, you're not born with this. This is not a disorder. This is not like, these are, you got a bunch of programs about love. You can change them. You can reprogram them. There's absolutely a way. And so if anybody's ever feeling down or, you know, overwhelmed or exhausted from just hardship in dating and love and relationships, there is 100% a better way. It's not that difficult. And healing is absolutely at anybody's fingertips.
Amazing. Wow, Taze, that was such an inspiring conversation and so many amazing tips that people can actually just literally take away and just be conscious about how they're communicating, what stories are happening in their mind and what they can actually do about it. So before we let you go, where can people find out more? And we talked about the school, where can people go?
Yeah, so I have that quiz on the website, so personaldevelopmentschool.com, and the attachment style quiz. And then I also put free content on YouTube every day. So about all the different attachment styles, I put pretty much a daily YouTube video out all about the different components and how to reprogram your subconscious. So you can check that out there too, personaldevelopmentschool-Taze Gibson.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time today, Taze. That's phenomenal. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
Remember that this is general advice only. Please see your healthcare professional for more information. So what's your take-home message today? Remember, it's all about progress and not perfection. And are you suffering from stress? Visit the Usawa Learning Hub on usawa.com.au for more resources on how to de-stress, re-energize, and reclaim your health. Enjoy the journey.